PPI.org.
They call us all extremists, 'cause we're out here in the street. How unpatriotic, veterans for peace. They say we gotta watch them like never before, 'cause there's nothing more dangerous than veterans against war. They stand on every corner with cameras in their hand, taking film and snapping pictures of everything they can. Upload photos, write reports on everything they saw, protecting all our citizens from folks who broke no law. They've been watching us so long, they know us to our core. They know we're peaceful veterans who know the cost of war. Because we've seen the horrors and the price we always pay, they've got to document everything we do and say. They call us all extremists, 'cause we're out here in the street. How unpatriotic, veterans for peace. They say we gotta watch them like never before, 'cause there's nothing more dangerous than veterans against war. War's a racket, Smedley said 80 years ago. 30 years of fighting, he once ran the show. A two-star major general who had something to say. When we go to war, a few profit, many pay. They call us all extremists, 'cause we're out here in the street. How unpatriotic, veterans for peace. They say we gotta watch them like never before, 'cause there's nothing more dangerous than veterans against war. They got Homeland Security, FBI and DIA, state and local police, don't forget the CIA. We are so important, a clear danger to the land. Can't let this love and peace thing get too far out of hand. They can listen anytime to anything we say. Eyes and ears are everywhere thanks to the NSA. Read our emails and our tweets, monitor our calls. Fourth Amendment, just be damned, 'cause they're above the law. They call us all extremists, 'cause we're out here in the street. How unpatriotic, veterans for peace. They say we gotta watch them like never before, 'cause there's nothing more dangerous than veterans against war. Got their brick, play all their tricks, wasting all our dough. All those files and photos with nothing much to show. So we raise our voices here today to let them know it's time. Stop hassling the peace groups, go back to fighting crime. They call us all extremists, 'cause we're out here in the street. How unpatriotic, veterans for peace. They say we gotta watch them like never before, 'cause there's nothing more dangerous than veterans against war. 'Cause there's nothing more dangerous than veterans against war.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm so glad this storm missed us. This is Dave Logson, Veterans for Peace, and welcome to another scintillating version of Veterans for Peace Hour. We got a full house here. We got a full agenda. We're going to try to get right to it as fast as we can. With us in the studio is our amazing engineer and host of the Catalyst Show on KFAI at 1 o'clock, Lydia Howe, the one and only Lydia Howe. Thank you, Lydia, for showing up in the snow and letting us all in. We have with us today, besides myself, I already ID'd myself, but we have J. Emily Peabody, who will be here talking about, you'll hear shortly about her one-person play about Jeanette Rankin. We have Michael Orange, longtime member of Vets for Peace, and who's headed up our organization's push for the assault weapons ban, and he will give us some information and updates on that that struggle. And of course, erstwhile Vets for Peace member and co-founder of Vets for Peace some 30 some years ago, Steve McEwen. So let's I want to get started by reading our statement of purpose. Sometimes we don't do that, but it's always good to know where we're coming from. Okay, here we go. Veterans for Peace is an international organization made up of military veterans, military family members, and allies. So here's the statement of purpose. We as military veterans do hereby affirm our greater responsibility to serve the cause of world peace. To this end, we will work with others, both nationally and internationally, to increase the public awareness of the causes and costs of war, to restrain our governments from intervening overtly and covertly in the internal affairs of other nations, to end the arms race, and to reduce and eventually eliminate nuclear weapons, big one there, to seek justice for veterans and victims of war, to abolish war as an instrument of national policy. To achieve these goals, members of Veterans for Peace pledge to use nonviolent means to maintain an organization that is both democratic and open, with the understanding that all members are trusted to act in the best interest of the group for the larger purpose of world peace. And there you have it. So, and I would like to say, before we get to our honored guests here, I ended my stint on the Veterans for Peace National Board, I thought, and then shortly after their meeting in Las Vegas, somebody had decided to leave the board, and I got an email saying, "Hey, Dave, you want to go back on the board?" So I'm back on the board. Back on the board again. All right. To get right to our program, is there anything else that you want to add, Steve? Or are you okay with starting with Emily right off the bat?
Oh, absolutely. I'd just like to have the listeners grab their pen or pencil, because I'll have a phone number for them in a little bit.
Yeah, so it's always good to have that pencil and paper, unless you're driving. Then that will give you a pass on that. So, Emily Peabody. So I've seen your wonderful play about Jeanette Rankin. Could you tell us a little bit about the play and Jeanette Rankin?
Well, I think the most important thing to know about Jeanette Rankin is that she was for peace. Peace was the thread that ran through all of her choices in life. It was so important to her. One of her first mentors was a woman who was a pacifist, and she was teaching her how to campaign for suffrage. And Jeanette was big in the suffrage movement. She was an incredible person. And you maybe don't know this, ladies and gentlemen, because not a whole lot of people do, but she was a first. She was the first woman elected to Congress in 1916. She was elected on a... But before that, she campaigned for suffrage all over the country. One of the things that rather shocked me was that Jeanette... There was a book that came out on the suffrage movement last year. It was about 750 pages. And Jeanette, who had campaigned in...
And what is suffrage? That's a kind of old-fashioned word a lot of folks won't know.
Well, let's go back there.
Voting rights. Just let's keep it simple.
Voting rights for women. And she campaigned for over 25 different states all over the country, and she was just a powerball. And when she came back to her home state after they got the vote for women in 1914, she ran for Congress. And amazingly enough, she won. For one reason, well, all this stuff is in the play, and you just have to see the play. And let me tell you, we're going to be doing a free F-R-E-E, performance of the play at the Minneapolis Library downtown in Pollard Hall on March 29th at 2 p.m.
March 29th at 2 p.m. Okay.
Yep, and that's why you should have your paper and pencils out, as Steve mentioned, because you want to write that one down. It is going to be free, and it's a 55-minute show that covers Jeanette's life from the suffrage movement through her first and her second congressional terms. In 1939, she ran a second time. She was elected, and she was the only dissenting vote for entrance to World War II. And that was such a shock to the public that I think that's why she's not in the books.
Yeah, I think about her. I remember in the play, what was startling was that she had to kind of police escort her out of Congress because there was such animosity.
Yes.
And she did vote against World War I, and she also, in her later years, she protested against the Vietnam War. So she was a longtime advocate, and we could use just a touch of that bravery right now in our Congress, don't you think?
Oh, especially the Senate.
Yeah. So that's March 29th, right?
March 29th, yes, at 2 p.m.
And you'll see, and it's a really nicely done performance. It's not even that long, maybe an hour and a half, right?
It's 55 minutes.
Not even,
but we will be having a Q&A afterwards.
And it's really good because it really brings up a part of our history to know that there were some brave people that said, hey, wait a minute, war is not a really good idea, folks. So thank you, Emily, for coming here, braving the snow. And
my pleasure. I'm heading towards Lake Erie for the art shanties. If you want to come on down there and snowshoe around, you can catch 3 minutes of my show in the trailer for the people who know things.
Yeah, ready to go. Well
and,
done.
Keep an ear out for my show, Catalyst, Politics and Cultures, Friday afternoons, 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. Within a couple of weeks of Emily's show on Jeanette Rankin, she will definitely be making an appearance where we can go into a little more depth.
Oh.
And no doubt I'll be able to persuade her to also give us a 3 to 5 minute excerpt to tantalize you into going to the appearance. March 23rd, 2 o'clock, the Downtown Central Library on
March
Nicollet.
29th.
I'm sorry, March 29th at the Downtown Central Library on Nicollet, and I think it's 3rd Ave, downtown Minneapolis.
Correct.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Emily, for coming down here and joining us. And good luck with that show. It's a great one. And we'll try and contact some of our East Coast chapters and see if we can arrange some dates for you on the way your way back from D.C.
Or on my way to D.C. That's a long drive for the Rankin-Mobile.
The Rankin-Mobile. I didn't know you had a mobile.
I do. That's what I got it for. Right. Traveling this show. Last year we were in Indianapolis, Illinois, and Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah, Missouri, as opposed to the home of the Kansas City Chiefs in Kansas. Thank you, Emily. And I think we're going to roll right along. And we have Michael Orange. And Michael Orange, in case any people don't know some of his background, he's written a great book. And I think they sell it at May Day still, right?
Yes, they do.
It's called Fire in a Hole, a year in a mortarman's year in Vietnam. Is that correct?
That's right, Dave.
And it's all about his experience as a Marine and his little vacation in Vietnam. Not really. And then the interesting thing about your that book is that you came back and you were at Kent State when the shooting at Kent State occurred.
I was there, Dave, for all the events that led up to the actual shootings. I was had joined the Merchant Marines after leaving the Marines and had to catch my ship. So I was there for the three days when the National Guard arrived and everything that preceded it. But I had left the day before the shootings.
Yeah. You're not here to plug your book, but I thought I'd do it anyway.
No.
And since everybody's plugging, Lydia's plugging her show and Emily's plugging her show. So we got Michael Orange is not plugging his show. He's going to talk to us about the assault weapons ban and Veterans for Peace's role.
Thanks, Dave, and thanks for having me here this morning. I'm with a subgroup of the local Chapter 27 Veterans for Peace, and we have been advocating to our legislators for an assault weapons ban. And we want them to take a bold and an uncompromising stand to ban the sale and the transfer of assault weapons. And that also includes high-capacity magazines and the attachments like bump stocks that increase firing rates. And there's a lot of states that have already passed similar bans in local communities, so this has been tested in the courts. We've also collaborated with other groups that are very much in support of red flag laws and then also universal background checks. Those are groups like Protect Minnesota, Moms Demand Action, and Every Town for Gun Safety. And with them, this is one of their citations, I think, that summarizes the issue. We're not anti-gun. We're anti-gun violence, and we support common sense legislation that can keep guns out of the hands of dangerous and suicidal individuals and prevent unintentional injury and death of children. We believe gun ownership should be well regulated as prescribed by the Second Amendment. And I find it interesting that half of all Americans still live in states where a convicted felon or a domestic abuser or a fugitive can skip a background check by finding an unlicensed seller at a gun show or online. This is a serious problem. And lawmakers need to close these kinds of dangerous loopholes and further strengthen the system by ensuring all background checks are completed before guns are sold. They should also empower law enforcement to pursue people who illegally try and fail to purchase guns. So that's the effort of all of us groups working to increase gun safety.
Michael, could you get a point of clarity? You were just saying that law enforcement should pursue people who try and fail to their background check. Is that not current law, or is it on the books but they don't enforce it? I thought it was a crime if you're a felon to try to buy guns. I guess I'm trying to get clarity on a state level. Is it already illegal, or are you trying to make it illegal? Could you just clarify that point about law enforcement and people who are trying to get a gun when they're not eligible?
Senator Limmer from the state legislature held a hearing a couple of months ago, and the focus was all of the laws that are on the books currently. He is a Republican. The Senate has opposed all efforts to improve gun safety with more gun control, sane gun control laws. He has opposed them. The Senate has opposed them. And that whole session, it was probably 2 hours long, focused on the laws.
You're talking the Minnesota State Senate. Should be clear.
My whole focus has been the legislature.
Okay. Make it clear it's state, not national.
And what was missing from that 2 hours are the gaps, the holes, the loopholes in our gun laws. And I think one of the, say, red herrings of people who are, say, super strong Second Amendment supporters are just always the line, we already have enough laws, they're just not being enforced. And I don't believe that's true. But I'd like to keep the focus on what we at Veterans for Peace are pushing for, which is assault weapons ban. And let me talk about the lethality of these weapons for a moment. And I fully understand the allure of these hyper-masculine firepower that these weapons involve. It's thrilling. I mean, my M16 was vital to my survival for my entire tour of duty in Vietnam. It was never further away than an arm's length from me that entire time. But I've seen the damage that their high-powered rounds cause. And let me give you some testimony from doctors have seen the results. Dr. Peter Ree compared the damage done by the AR-15. The AR-15 is just the civilian version of an M16. It's semi-automatic. Our M16s were fully automatic. But the AR-15, and he compared it to a wound from a 9mm handgun. He said, One looks like a grenade went off in there. The other looks like a bad knife cut. Another doctor, Dr. Jeremy Cannon, said, the tissue destruction is almost unimaginable. Bones are exploded. Soft tissue is absolutely destroyed. Injuries to the chest or abdomen, it's like a bomb went off. A friend of mine was a medic in Vietnam. He told me about the body of an enemy soldier who had been shot in the left hand by one of his fellow Army soldiers. Shot in the hand by an M16. The round traveled up his arm, went through his body, and then exited just above his knee. It exploded everything in its path because it creates a shock wave as it travels through the body. Those are post-mortem descriptions. I was there. I've seen it happen. I've seen M16 rounds literally rip people apart. And on the other side of this is the gun lobby, and their insane arguments are based on lies. I was shocked when I learned the history behind the Second Amendment. The gun lobby ignores the first part of the amendment where it reads, quote, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, and it goes on from there. Congress passed the Second Amendment in 1791 to preserve the slave patrol militias in the southern states. That's why it specifically applies to security in the states instead of in the country. Congress passed it to preserve slavery. The gun lobby claims that gun ownership stops crime, including mass murders. It's a lie. And there have been lots of studies on this. The Scientific American looked at 30 careful studies and showed that more guns are linked to more crimes. Another study, this was in the Washington Post, said for every criminal killed in self-defense, 34 innocent people die. So, in short, so-called good people with assault weapons can keep them, according to what we're pushing for, provided they register them. It's registration, not confiscation. And bad people with assault weapons who commit a crime should lose them, and the penalties should be increased if the weapon was involved in the crime. And what we're hoping for are to ban future sales.
Can I throw something out there for my peace brethren here?
Oh, boy.
No, this is to affirm what Michael was saying. This whole good guy with the gun is going to, you know, protect us. In the mass shooting that happened in Arizona, where Congresswoman Gabby Gifford was having a open exchange with her constituents, there was a good guy with a gun there. But he recognized there were so many civilians around that he was afraid he was as likely to hit a civilian as the mass shooter. Want to know who stopped? The guy whose name I can't remember and wouldn't say anyway, the shooter? A 62-year-old woman who, as he was reloading, ran up to him, grabbed his arm with both hands, held on with all her might until he was tackled by the guys there who then disarmed him. Mm-hmm. And I just turned 62, so that makes me feel really brave. But I just wanted to underscore your point. And one more thing, I just want to say, I think it is really wonderful that Veterans for Peace is dealing with this war at home that we're all being subjected to. And I think it's particularly powerful to share your experience having been a combat veteran and what these assault weapons actually do.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we're about due for a little break here. And you know, to cue up some music, that would be nice. But anyway, Michael, thank you for coming down. I was just out in Cuba last month, in December, and they don't have handguns. They don't have guns on the street. No guns. Zero guns on the street. I never saw one police siren going off the whole time I was there. I'm perfectly safe because there's no guns on the streets. Mm-hmm. Zero.
Well, can I have a kind of a closing statement for you? Assault weapons were designed for war fighting. They're designed to cause as much death and destruction as possible in as short a time as possible, which is why they're preferred by mass murderers. And our gun controls laws are so full of holes, a person can legally obtain an assault weapon and a drum magazine that can fire 100 high-powered armor-piercing rounds in about 2 minutes. These weapons of mass destruction do not belong in the hands of mass murderers or civilians. If a person wants to experience the thrill of military weaponry, they should join the military.
Yeah.
Thank
Jose
you, Michael.
Marti
was born in 1834. When he was 17 years old, he was active in the Cuban Liberation Movement, and he was exiled by the Spanish governor. He spent most of his life in exile, including 12 years in New York City. He wrote 70 books, poetry, novels, polemics. He's one of the greatest writers in the Spanish language. At the age of 42, he went back to Cuba. And this is one of his last poems because he was killed within the year in an abortive uprising. After he died, people put it to a popular tune. Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera, Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera. Yo soy un hombre sincero, de donde crece la palma. Yo soy un hombre sincero, de donde crece la palma. Antes de morir me quiero, echa mis versos del alma. Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera, Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera. Mi verso es de un verde claro y de un carmín encendido. Mis versos es de un verde claro y de un carmín encendido. Mi verso es un cielo herido que busca en el monte amparo. Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera, Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera. The words mean, I am a truthful man from the land of the palm trees. And before dying, I want to share these poems of my soul. My poems are soft green. My poems are also flaming crimson. My poems are like a wounded fawn seeking refuge in the forest. The last verse says, con los pobres de la tierra, with the poor people of this earth, I want to share my fate. The streams of the mountain pleases me more than the sea. Con los pobres de la tierra, quiero yo mi suerte echar. Con los pobres de la tierra, quiero yo mi suerte echar. El arroyo de la sierra me complace más que el mar. Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera, Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera. Once more, Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera, Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera.
Welcome back to the Veterans for Peace Hour. I'm your host, Dave Logsdon, member of the National Veterans for Peace Board of Directors. Before we get on to roll along here to Steve, I will mention that we do have a email address and a website and a phone number. So if you want to get your sharpen your pencils there, I'll give you a second. All right, you got your pad of paper and a pencil. Veteran, it's just the email is pretty simple. VFP, like Veterans for Peace, VFP chapter 27 at Gmail. And the website is www.vfpchapter27.org. And we also have a Facebook page. The phone number is 612-821-9141. That's the area code 612-821-9141. Well, we have with us Steve McKeown, and Steve has been doing this stuff, working this peace thing for over 30 years with Veterans for Peace, and he's got a lot of stories to tell, but he won't tell them right now. But so, Steve, what did you? I'll let you take over.
Okay, well, first of all, that music there, I could, instead of speaking, I could have just laid back in the chair right
no
here
kidding.
For another 10 minutes.
And by the way, in
it.
Cuba, when I was there, every group and every corner, they would eventually get to Guantanamo. They all played it. It's very revolutionary song. So,
well, as long as everybody's got their pad and pencil, and I'll repeat these numbers again after I get through speaking. The first one is going to be United States Senator Amy Klobuchar. Phone number, the local one here, is 612-727-5220. And I'll explain here in a minute here what that phone number means, what we'd like you to do. And the other phone number is U.S. Senator Tina Smith. And her local number is 651-221-1016. And the reason I'm giving out these phone numbers is to strongly urge our senators, as Dave said, one of our statement of purposes, when he had referred to our statement of purpose earlier, was to reduce and eventually abolish nuclear weapons. Well, right now we're on a campaign to strongly urge our senators to support the United Nations Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. This treaty was passed unanimously, almost unanimously, a vote of 122-1 in the General Assembly in 2017. And the international campaign to abolish nuclear weapons, which the National Veterans for Peace and the local Women Against Military Madness organization is a member of. There's 532 members of this. They won the Nobel Peace Prize for their efforts in 2017. And the person that received that prize, Beatrice Finn, I was fortunate enough to be on a panel with her and with Marie Brown from Women Against Military Madness here in 2018 over at the Augsburg Nobel Peace Prize Forum. Michael mentioned Gabby Gifford, Lydia mentioned Gabby Gifford, the person, the legislator that was shot. She also spoke at the Nobel Peace Prize Forum over there, too, about the necessity of gun legislation. The Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons is the first legally binding international agreement to comprehensively prohibit nuclear weapons with the goal of leading towards their total elimination. Women Against Military Madness, the End War Committee's petition, which we've had to ban nuclear weapons drive, that we've conducted also Veterans for Peace, Chapter 27, has collected nearly 23,000 signatures on paper petitions from all of the 851 incorporated towns and cities in Minnesota.
Let me stop you there, Steve. Now think about this, folks. There's 851?
851 incorporated towns and cities in Minnesota.
And we got signatures. That was where our peace bus came in handy.
Yes, we've traveled to the four corners of the state. I might add there's 41 more towns and cities that aren't incorporated that we put on. We've got a map, a large map that we've brought in to some of our representatives and senators' office that have pins in them, and they're, they've got a legend, just like we learned in school, you know, with geography lessons. We're putting that to use. Teachers would like to know that. With these pins on that we drag into our senators, and they take pictures of it. They're impressed by it.
And the beauty of it, too, is the some of the stories that come out of going into these small towns, going into VFWs, and going into the bar. They got one bar in town, and going in there and grabbing a beer and schmoozing the locals and getting them to sign the petition. It's pretty amazing.
I'm
confused. This United Nations treaty for the prohibition of nuclear weapons, it's passed the UN?
It's passed the General Assembly.
When?
It passed in 2017 or 2016. They got it, and it's in the process of being ratified.
And it says 122 nations to one, but that's not all the nations in the Assembly, is it?
No, that's the ones that did vote.
Okay, of the ones that voted, which was the one?
I think that was the Netherlands, but I don't swear
the
by
Netherlands
it.
Said no to banning nuclear weapons?
And that's
weapons?
Because of NATO, I think. I think that's because of housing NATO. But
so it's not a real treaty yet?
No, it has to be ratified. It is a treaty, but it has to be ratified to become international law. And what that means, just like here in our country, we'd have to go through our Senate. And that's why it's important to call our senators. And I'll give you those numbers again.
You see, I think people don't understand this. They're like, the United Nations, far away, what? It's kind of important to let them know this sort of basic logistics. We can't assume folks know this. I'll be honest with you. I keep hearing about the nuclear arms treaty between the United States and, I guess, Russia. They used to be the Soviet Union. So it's very confusing. It's like, what treaty are we talking about? Is it one that's already happened that Trump's trying to pull us out of? Or is this a new treaty?
Well, yes, it is relatively new. It goes a step further than the START treaties, START 1 and START 2, and then the a couple other treaties, assault treaties, and all of that stuff that we're kind of wiggling out of right now. But the START treaties were supposed to eliminate nuclear weapons. And what's happened on some of this stuff is that they've been used against countries like Iran, saying, okay, we're going to get the splinter out of your eye, but forget the log in our eye. The log being that Russia and the United States were supposed to work towards elimination. They haven't done this, and so in 2007, Physicians Against Social Responsibility got together, and this is a subgroup that came out of here, the International Campaign. And they've been working on it, and they kind of went after, like, the campaign to ban landmines. They started off locally with nations, and they kind of used them as a model. And they've been persistent on it. And
what was that, that group of Physicians for
Social Responsibility.
I thought I heard.
And nuclear disarmament.
I thought I heard against.
No.
Okay.
Against nuclear weapons. But, so there's 35 nations that have ratified this so far, and that means there's 15 to go, and it becomes international law. Now, none of the 9 nuclear nations have signed on to this.
When you say 35, this is confusing. There's the General Assembly, which has what? You said the 122 passed it in the General Assembly. Who is this 35 nations?
Okay, the 35 nations have ratified it. I mean, all of these 122 can. Some of those are signature states, like the Vatican, for example. I shouldn't say 122 nations. Signature, I don't understand totally that part of it right there about the signature states like the Vatican. But these nations that are ratifying it right now, more than 50 can. You know, it isn't. No, nothing says that they can't.
Do you assume the United States is,
that's the minimum,
not exactly a cheerleader for this passing?
Trump says that he won't. That he won't do it. But you know, the people are really going to be the ones behind.
Well, obviously, President Obama wasn't interested in either if this was passed in 2016, and
towards the end.
Okay.
Yeah.
But there's that lame duck thing. You can make it work for you. You know.
Well, thank you, my co-host Lydia, for chiming in. So Steve, could you give us the numbers of the Amy and Tina, and when people call them, what exactly should they focus on when they?
Sure. Okay. I'll tell you what they should focus on first. What we'd like to do, and keep it simple. You don't have to know all the details about this to know that nobody's good enough. That's our message. Nobody's good enough to have these weapons. Some of the resistance that we get for signing the petition saying, well, yeah, we want all the other countries, except we want to have them, then we'll do it. You know, but we're still maintaining that position consistently, that nobody is good enough to have them. And that's, we want the message to be to support this treaty, the UN treaty, to ban nuclear weapons. Pope Francis has come out strong for it. Former Soviet Premier Mikhail Gorbachev has came out strong for it, and a lot of religious leaders have come out strong for it. And so we're trying to put the pressure on. We've met so far with some of the representatives, and we met with Senator Tina Smith's office, but not her personally. We're trying to, the scheduler there is trying to arrange that, and we're bringing in these petitions. I mean, we did the petitions by paper because it represents a lot of work, and it's something that they just can't delete. And so that phone number, those phone numbers, again, are to support the United Nations ban on nuclear weapons. Senator Amy Klobuchar's number is 612-727-5220. And Senator Tina Smith's is 651-221-1016. And what's important about these phone calls is that when we go in there, like Senator Smith's office, for example, said that, yeah, they've been receiving a lot of calls. And this kind of preps the area, so to speak. Michael, being an artillery person, mortarman, he knows that word pretty well, as I do, being a radio operator in Vietnam. What that means to prep the area first, a military term. You go in there, and it makes it a little bit, get the message across a little better. So that part on the nuclear weapons, there's something else I'd like to bring up. Do we have time right now, Dave, to say
something
else? Minutes.
Okay. What the hell?
I coordinate the, or help co-coordinate the newsletter, have for 27, 28 years now, our quarterly newsletter. And this last year, we were fortunate enough to have on to someone write an article, Laurel Krauss, sister of Allison Krauss. I don't know if the listeners recognize that name, but on May 4th, 1970, it had a profound, that day had a profound effect on me. I know it did by Michael here, who was there at the place that we're going to be talking about, Kent State, where four students were killed by the Ohio National Guard. Laurel Krauss's sister, Allison, was killed. She was one of the four that were killed, and she wrote an article for our newsletter, and she's going to write again for our upcoming one, our spring issue here, about it's going to be the 50th anniversary of the Kent State massacre.
Wow.
It had a profound effect on me because here we are killing our own. I never said much. I got out of Vietnam in 1967, wasn't old enough to vote. I never said much about the war. I kind of worked for Senator McGovern, but back in South Dakota, being a family friend of ours, but didn't do much about the war. But when that happened, that kind of moved me to just start telling people and friends, this is, you know, can't you see what's in front of you? This ought to tell you if nothing else does. But what I would like to say is that this anniversary, they're trying to whitewash it. And that with Laurel, is the college is trying to whitewash what really went down that day. And they're spending a lot of money doing it. And she's going to be writing an article about that for our newsletter. But Michael Orange was there at Kent State. He went to college there. And so, Michael, I'd like to turn it over to you to say just what kind of an effect that had on you.
Okay, thanks, Dave. First, I think a little history would be helpful. Nixon campaigned in 1968 to end the war in Vietnam and then turned around and extended it for another 5 years. And the what had happened is he expanded the war from Vietnam into the neutral country of Cambodia. And that news came out at the end of April in 1970. And the campuses across the United States erupted with the news that Nixon had expanded the war into a neutral country. There was a very active anti-war community. It was very active in political campus, back to even the civil rights movement back in the 60s. So the for my personal side of it, I came onto campus on Friday, May 2nd, 1970. I was in the Merchant Marines and had gotten off my ship for a time period to and visit friends at the campus. And that's another long story. But I was there when the campus was erupting with political protests. It was a really warm night, the first warm night of the spring. There was a break before the finals for the students. And it's a big campus. There were 36,000 students at that time. And the police shut down all the bars because of the turmoil in the streets. There were motorcycle gangs having just causing trouble. So it began political, but also had kind of a social, just kids acting up kind of aspect to it. But the political what was important, because Governor Rhodes, governor of Ohio, was a Republican running for re-election. And like Nixon and many Republicans, was on a campaign of suppressing protest, a law and order candidacy. And so he took that opportunity to see this turmoil on the campus to work with the mayor, Mayor Satram, to then call in the National Guard. They came in on Saturday, and that's when I basically freaked out seeing a armored personnel carrier driving down the street with an M60 machine gun with the ammo belt, a loaded M60 machine gun, driving down the main street of the camp of the city of Kent. I had to leave to catch my ship, but what happened on the morning of May 4th is that the students then had major protests. The National Guard had been there for the third day they were there, and began just doing these movements on the campus. And at one point, a platoon turned and then basically took firing positions to frighten the students, and but they opened fire. There are, I think it's, I don't know how many hundreds of rounds were fired. 13 students were shot. 4 students were killed, included a friend of mine, a person I knew. And it had this incredible effect across the entire country. As Steve pointed out, we were killing our own. And there's a really important point here. Yes, we were. And Kent State was unique in our modern times of police or the military killing our own, I want to emphasize, white people, white students. Because on May 11th, less than a week later, the students were also protesting the war at Jackson State, a primarily black university. And police, mostly in this case, it was the local police and the state patrol, shot 11 students and they killed 2. And Jackson State always seems to be like a footnote to Kent State.
Yeah.
I think that's unfair.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was it just wasn't unique for our police or military to kill black people. But turning back to Kent State, I wanted to point out one more thing, Steve, and that's that we're really in divisive times right now. We have a president that I cannot mention his name without the word vile coming to mind, which is my wife's common
please term don't.
For him. It's an incredibly divisive time, but I will still argue that that whole period of the Vietnam War was more so. There was more division within family, brother to brother, parents to children, within a church or a parish, or certainly in the politics. And we came through that, I think, more divisive time. And amazing things happened in that post-war period, from incredible improvements to civil rights dating back to the early 60s. 70s saw us with the environmental movement, gay rights movement. We had even prisoner rights and some really good music with rock and
really,
roll. We came through that divisive period, and I really believe... I really firmly believe we will come through this period and stronger from this period of regression progression will come to.
Well, thank you for that hopeful note, because it's sometimes you we put information out and it gets to be, it could get people down and burn out because we're not got to throw these seeds of hope out. And I'll tell you what, in this in our Twin Cities area, we have an amazing group of anti-war and social activists of all stripes right now, and right at the building where our office is. And by the way, we are having our monthly meeting tonight. If you're out there and you're a veteran and you want to kick the tires and see what we're all about, our meeting is at 6 o'clock at 4200 Cedar, the Activist Center, where it's the same home as MIRAC, the Immigrant Rights Group, the Communities Against Police Brutality, Anti-War Committee, and WHAM. The Anti-War Committee does amazing jobs at organizing these terrific street protests, and we always partner with them on that. But they are so active. And then WHAM is a mothership. They have a paid staff.
Stands for
Women Against Military Madness, WHAM. And you could become a member of Vets for Peace even if you're not a veteran. You could be an associate member. We have a number of us associate members that are very valuable to our group.
I should say I've been an associate member since, I always forget if the first attack on Iraq was 1990 or 1991.
91.
Well, that's how I found out about Veterans for Peace.
January 16th.
Yeah, I remember the time, just the year. I'm always, is it 90 or 91?
Yeah,
that's when
so
I
just
too.
To say, you know, I'm not a vet, military veteran, but have always felt very welcome by
absolutely.
VFP.
You are welcome. And also, if you're a man, you can become part of Women Against Military Madness. And that's for all my whammers out there. I give them a little plug. But I am a member of Women Against Military Madness, and I'm pretty sure that I'm not a woman. So we're going to move right along. I don't think we're going to maybe skip that song.
Okay.
We're just going to continue on. Steve, you got something here. That partnership, once again, a partnership between Women Against Military Madness and Veterans for Peace has produced this this wonderful postcard. And Steve, tell us a little bit more about it.
Yes, I'll say that about the postcard, but just in reference to Michael speaking about Kent State, it was my division, the 4th Infantry Division, that went into Cambodia when that happened. And also Veterans for Peace in 1987 on a car caravan to Washington, D.C. to protest contra-aid in Nicaragua. We stopped in Kent State. I slept on the hill there where, you know, right before where the students were killed that were down in the parking lot. And I know Jerry Rao, one of the founders of Veterans for Peace, he turned in one of his medals at the memorials there.
Steve, before I should mention, it's the 50th anniversary this May 4. And there'll be a large gathering. You mentioned the campus of the university trying to squash it, but there'll be really huge events this
and are they really trying to squash it?
Oh, yes. A big time Jesus money, and Laurel Krauss will be writing about that in our newsletter.
God, how vino.
So we've got this thing here in about 8-9 years ago. I was calling around for churches to ring bells for Armistice Day instead of shooting off the weapons. Well, churches don't shoot off the weapons, although I know one that was going to one year to remember the end of the war to end all wars. But that's another story. But one of the phone calls I had was to a minister up in northern Minnesota. I won't mention the town's name, but they play a lot of hockey up there. And he says, yeah, we'll ring the bells, he said. But do you know where I can get some more of these cards, he said? He says, Women Against Military Madness and Interfaith Peacemakers of Edina. He says, they talk about all this military spending on these postcards. He says, I'd like to get some more of them because I go out at night in the parking lots when they don't see me. Now, this is a minister, and I put them on their windshield. I thought that was just wonderful.
My kind of minister.
So, VFP member and a WHAM member, Tom White, has for many years put out these postcards every year, and now he's got the 2020 U.S. military spending. Now is, it's, the headlines on here say, is now 35% of the military spending in the whole world. But it's a two-sided card, and Wham just printed out 10,000 of them. And I'm sure that for a nominal fee, you can pick up a number of them, and maybe you can go do it like this minister does. It could be various events that you do this at. It doesn't have to be the windshield. For example, for the last couple of years, I've been out, and Dave's been with me there at the opening Twins game when they fly, have the flyovers, and we just hand out these cards and say, well, when these planes are coming over, maybe you want to take pause and look at this military spending here. It kind of outlines it. For example, the United States has, out of the discretionary spending of $1.43 trillion. I mean, I can't imagine trillions of dollars. But anyway, $738 billion of that, that's discretionary spending, goes to the military. Now, this doesn't include the veterans' health care. It doesn't include nuclear weapons from the Department of Energy, Homeland Security, all of this stuff right here. So it goes up much higher. There's other charts that say that it's much less than that, but that's where they usually put in Social Security and Medicare and all that stuff, which isn't discretionary spending. So these cards right here, get a hold of Women Against Military Madness.
Or us.
Or Veterans for Peace. And we'll get them to you. Yeah.
And really, we're running out of time. And, of course, we never have enough time. It always seems like we could do 2 hours, but we are running up against the clock. But I would like to mention,
just put the website out there again.
I'm going to put the website out again. That's a good idea. You know, this is why you're the co-host here. Unofficial.
That's a VFP. Yeah. V as in Victor, F as in... Yeah. V is in Veterans, F is in Four, P is in Peace, chapter27.org, VFP.org, yes. VFP, chapter27.org.
Absolutely. Well said, you know. You know, I'm going to keep you on as our co-host here.
Oh, thanks.
anyway, hopefully we'll have another Veteran Peace hour in the near future.
Or be guests on my show.
And let me say this, that Veterans for Peace is very grateful for a long relationship we've had with KFAI. And if you're out there and you're a member of Veterans for Peace and you haven't given money to KFAI, put them on your list, because if this station goes away, the voice of progressive people in this town is going to be watered down significantly.
Hey, will be erased from the airwaves. Even other so-called public media, you just don't hear anybody opposing the endless wars and the insane military budget, which this card now says is 52% of our budget. Well, our time is up. The WAVE Project, want to let people know this is a community access hour. We'll provide you an engineer who usually won't talk as much as I have, but these are my friends of almost 30 years. Go to KFEI.org and you can apply for an available date. The WAVE Project's anything you want it to be. We love having the community on the air.